out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday, the 2nd of May, 2019, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and we're broadcasting live today at radioarian.com because we have with us Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from rustjournal.org. Matt, how are you doing today?
Something just occurred to me, I mean, just a few seconds ago, and you have guys like Joseph Edosian, the hereditary prince of Asaba, the Delta State in Nigeria. You have Mboba Tijoso from the Ogun State in Nigeria. These are real, actual Nigerian princes. So if they ever need help from abroad, what do they say? They can't say, I'm a Nigerian prince, I need your money. What do they say? They're screwed. They're actual Nigerian princes. What are they? They're finished. There's no way they could go and ask for help or any have any kind of institutions or websites abroad because they're going to be made fun of. It's being a Nigerian prince has ruined their lives, I think, if they ever needed help from outside of the country. This is a huge ethical issue for me.
I think that's the main that's the main product, actually, that they export from Nigeria, isn't it? Is it these internet phone scams? Did you know they even have hate crimes over there in Nigeria? There's a charity over there that's trying to promote the idea of hate crimes in a country that's 99.9% black. Crazy. Crazy. Anyway, that's totally different to what we're going to be talking about today. We're going to be talking about the deficit in genuine journalists and the effect of that. And I see it as really, it's like a vicious circle because the people are fed up with the media because of its left-wing bias and its fake news. Because of that, they've had to scale down, so they can't afford to have senior journalists. They can't afford to have foreign correspondents. And because they can't afford that, they end up with activists and they end up with just repeating what the politicians tell them. And of course, that just leaves even more left-wing bias, even more fake news. And it's a continuing downward spiral of lies, which of course benefits us, because we provide alternative media, we try to get as close to the truth as we can. But it also hurts other countries. It hurts countries like Russia, it hurts countries like Syria, all these countries that have the foreign correspondents, the foreign bureaus, they get removed from that country, and then it becomes a target for American, EU, Israeli fake news, basically. We've got some articles we're going to be talking about to show that from Russia today. But before we get into that, we're just going to, you know, I just find this quite shocking, Matt, that apparently all these newspapers have closed down their foreign bureaus. Do you want to just tell us a little bit about that? Because I hadn't really thought about that before till today.
Well, I'm still upset with you just dismissing these Nigerian princes who can have no help anywhere and their life is over. But apart from those guys, around the time I formulated Johnson's Law in like 2002, that was around the time these newspapers began purging real, much older, competent. They weren't competent. They were relatively competent, and replacing these foreign correspondents with kids, who you could tell them anything, and you don't have to pay them very much. I mean, these newspapers are all going broke. The Washington Post is shutting down most of theirs. I think they have 10 journalists covering the entire planet, all very young. None of them specialists in any particular area. One of the White House, he got into a lot of trouble for this, but Ben Rhodes from the, one of the White House, security advisors said something that I've been saying for many years. And I'll read it for you if you don't mind. He says, all these newspapers used to have foreign bureaus. Now they don't. They call us meaning the federal government, to explain to them what's happening in Moscow or Cairo. Most of these outlets are reporting on world events from Washington. The average reporter we talk to is 27 years old, and their only reporting experience consists of being around political campaigns. This is a huge sea change. They literally know nothing. Now, I've been saying this for years and years and years, and I've noticed a very steep decline in foreign affairs reporting. You know, the use of slogans and white hat, black hat morality plays, and, you know, the use of, you know, trendy, current postmodern political labels, then using them in China and Burma, like that makes any sense. There's real amateur stuff. And their ages being very, they don't know. And even if they had sufficient correspondence, they're mostly embedded with military units anyway, and they're told what to say, and for their own protection, of course. And they're simply too young. They're not specialists in the area, and they get shifted around from place to place. They could be covering Syria one day, Bulgaria the next. And now this guy was ripped apart in the press. Elite journals were calling him everything, quite literally, cursing and swearing at him. Because what he didn't say here, of course, is that these guys are going to NGOs, which are corporate fronts. So they go to Soros, they go to big corporations, they go to U.S., they go to CIA agents, maybe not even knowing that they're CIA people. And he said they're reporting from Washington. They never even leave here. They don't know the language. They don't understand. And what you end up getting is this blueprint, cliche-ridden thing that's called foreign policy reporting. You just can't read, and this is a systemic issue. Now, this isn't just bias. This is systemic. They have no idea what they're talking about. And what you're getting from the major newspapers is just pablum. And that's why you have to go to independent journalists. And the other part of the circle that you're talking about is that competent journalists aren't going into these institutions. They're guys like Wade Madsen and all these other guys. They're going out on their own because they'd rather maintain their integrity than become a whore for these people. So the circular decay is even worse in that respect.
Well, I think another one of the NGOs that they go to that comes to mind is the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights. All the reporting on Syria came through the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, which was based in a bungalow in Kent and was never in Syria. And yet that was being portrayed as accurate news. And I've had some experience of this, Matt. I forget which one it was. One of the investigative reporters, and he called himself an investigative reporter that did a hack job story on Radio Arium. He'd actually won an award. And what all this guy did was take information from Hope Not Hate, which I guess is the equivalent of an NGO. It calls itself a charity, and it's basically just a parallel spy agency that writes nonsense about nationalists. And they just repeated the nonsense that Hope Not Hate had written about Radio Arium without bothering to check it for himself. And of course, it was inaccurate. It had falsehoods in it. So this top investigative reporter just ended up repeating all these falsehoods. And but judging by the communication that I had with him, I would guess that, yes, he probably was under the age of 27 and he'd been given an award, probably just because he was diverse. They like to say how many non-whites that they're employing there. But there really has been a drop in standards in journalism. And it just feeds upon itself. I think it's just going to get worse and worse and worse. And this is one of the reasons why they're able to get away with the things that they are saying about Russia in particular. And just yesterday we had a failed coup in Venezuela. And I've watched both the BBC and I've watched RT reporting on this. And you could tell that the BBC were embarrassed about what they were having to say. They were embarrassed about reporting what Mike Pompeo actually had to say about this coup, because he was blaming Russia for the fact that the coup had failed. And he was literally saying that Maduro was pulled off of his escape plane by Russians. And it was just laughable. And you could see that the BBC reporter, I forget the exact words that they used, it's something like America is saying this, because they just knew it would just be too embarrassing for them to repeat it as if it was the truth. I've got a quote here from RT where they talk about it. Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro refuted the statement by US Secretary of State Mike Pompeo that he had almost escaped to Cuba, but that Russians had talked him out of it. Moscow called it fake news. Mike Pompeo said that I, Maduro, had a plane ready to go to Cuba to flee, and that the Russians got him off the plane and forbade him to leave the country. Mr. Pompeo, please, what lack of seriousness, Maduro said during a nationwide address announcing the defeat of the failed coup attempt. At the height of the civil unrest on Tuesday, Pompeo appeared on CNN claiming Maduro had an airplane on the tarmac all set to leave for Cuba before the Russians indicated he should stay. Both Russian and Venezuelan foreign ministries pilloried the American for peddling what they called fake news. Making up fake news is a very sad way to accept that the coup you backed has failed once again. Diplomacy has to be restored in the US government, Foreign Minister Jorge Arreaza tweeted. I mean, America just looks absolutely ridiculous with Pompeo saying things like this. I mean, how on earth can he think that he's going to be believed just making stuff up like that? As if there were Russians that just dragged Maduro off the plane and said, you must stay there and be president of your country. I mean, he's been voted in as president. This coup was, it looks like it was just Guaido stood there with a couple of military men saying, rise up military and join me. And it completely failed. And so they just looked for someone to blame and thought, let's just blame Russia. Nobody's going to question that. Nobody else in the media is going to question that, even though it's so ridiculous on the face of it. Did you see this, Matt? Did you hear about this failed coup?
Yeah. And one of the first things, you mentioned that this guy winning an award, and you're going to see this a lot with stories like this. You know, the U.S. military has lost pretty much every battle it's ever been involved in since World War II, but there's been an explosion in the number of medals that officers give themselves. And I think there's a connection there. The worse they perform, they compensate by sticking medals on each other. And you're going to start seeing these, you know, 20-somethings getting all kinds of, you know, pompous-sounding awards for saying crap like this. I mean, this is the same regime that said that, you know, Putin pushed Trump into office. I mean, the level of discourse is now so bad, there has to be this minority of sensitive people who can fight back. You know, Johnson's law states that, you know, when, because these areas are relatively obscure, now you have millennials in this position. Why are they going to work? Why are they going to read like I did in college and grad and read and master these areas? Why? When all they have to do is spout these lines, get awards, get paid big money, and no one questions them. What is the incentive? But you're going to have this small minority that will do what I did. And this is going to be actual journalism. Academia and journalism now are done outside of these institutions. And it's to the point where, you know, it's hard to argue against these things, except just to laugh at them, because they're not really putting forward an argument that can be taken seriously in the first place. It's not like they're putting out facts that we can refute or interpretations that we can refute. It's just, it's playground stuff. I thought the Russian collusion was the lowest, but it keeps going. It's getting worse and worse and worse.
Well, most of the time they just regurgitate press releases, but there are also editorials that are attacking Russia. And this month there was Time magazine, which did a real hack job on them. And we've got a couple of quotes here that we'll get into from that. And this is Time magazine being reviewed by RT. The Kremlin, we are told, has been scouring the world in search of influence in an attempt to fill the void by an inward-looking West. This is the point at which alarm bells start ringing for those with even a cursory grasp of US and Western foreign policy, who will be asking themselves, since when has the US, with its constant destructive and unwanted interference in the affairs of other nations, ever been inward-looking? When soon after, Schuster quotes former NATO Secretary General Anders Fogh Rasmussen, framing international relations as a fight between the noble West and the Russian bad guys, we move beyond parody. On and on the story goes, detailing the activities of Russian mercenaries in Sudan. Pro tip, military mercenaries are only bad if they are Russian. And lamenting the Trump administration's new Africa strategy, which cuts aid to African nations that are tempted into deals with Russia or China. The great fear is that Russia is offering its allies in Africa soft power assistance with state building that is typically provided by NGOs and development agencies. Former USAID contractor Paul Stronsky warns Schuster that Russians are learning from us, the Americans that is, but the key difference is that unlike those offered by the well-intentioned US government, the reforms Russia offers to its allies are mostly cosmetic and don't really address the corruption in the system. If you didn't laugh while reading that, you probably don't know much about US foreign policy. Well, I thought that it was just China that was actually getting involved in Africa. I didn't realize that Russia were there as well. Do you know much about this, Matt? Russia's Africa strategy?
Sure. Yeah. The Shanghai Cooperation Organization and their financial institutions, the same institutions that are de-dollarizing the area and the Silk Road Initiative and everything else, they're taking the place of the corporate, because NGOs are just corporate institutions, just tax-free corporate bodies. And, you know, IMF, which is just a consortium of the major banks, and taking their place. They're offering them better terms. And, you know, things like, you know, well-intentioned U.S. government, or that cosmetic thing. No evidence. Doesn't explain what he's talking about. Is Stronsky a former government employee? I have no idea who he is or if he has any knowledge in the area at all. And who's going to what, get a run over there and try to see if it's true? It's just these are, you know, you can't argue against it. You know, it's like telling someone that they're stupid and running away from them. And you know, if you were to make it, if I were to make an argument like this, I would have footnotes and I would explain in some depth the failed projects and all the money, where it comes from and everything else. No, they're perfectly happy with using slogans like inward looking, despite the fact the U.S. is a global empire. So they just invent the fact. And I mean, this is the level. If one of my undergraduates from years ago were to give this in as a paper, it would get a D minus. It would be a rough draft. And I would say, okay, this needs a lot of work. But this is a cover story of Time magazine, meant to influence policymakers and everybody else, and had this blood red cover. You know, it's a declaration of war from people who, as we've already said, don't know anything.
That's quite hilarious, calling America inward looking. It goes on to get even worse. The value Russia prizes above all others, we learn, is sovereignty, and the principle that each regime has the right to rule its territory without fear of foreign interference. Casting the very concept of national sovereignty as some dirty Russian idea is just another way of telling the reader US wars for regime change, no matter how disastrous and bloody, are good and for good causes. To see Russia's evil in action, we are told to look how it uses its veto power at the UN to help its friends and allies. Another laughable and utterly hollow argument when you consider how the US repeatedly uses its own UN veto power to shield Israel from responsibility for its treatment of Palestinians and civilian casualties in Gaza and the West Bank. Ultimately, Schuster claims Russia has created a ragtag empire of pariah autocracies and half-failed states. But for those of us who inhabit the real world, when it comes to propping up dictators and creating failed or half-failed states, Iraq, Libya, Syria, there is no country more wildly successful than the US. Unfortunately, however, Schuster appears to have come down with an acute case of projectionitis. While he thinks his argument is, how dare Russia lend its support to dubious players around the world, it is actually, how dare Russia do anything we do and think they can get away with it. I'm amazed at this, that they would actually portray national sovereignty and independence as somehow being a bad thing, Matt. I mean, that's really one step further than it's ever gone before.
Language. Just take that one. See, this is why I didn't, the article itself is so bad. Just take there's one sentence, the word ragtag, the word pariah, autocracy even, and then half failed. No analyst of any ability would ever use these words except as a conclusion after a mountain of evidence. These words already imply a conclusion. It's the opposite of analysis. I don't know what ragtag means. Pariah, that means the U.S. doesn't like them. And what in the heck is a half-failed state? You mean a half-successful state? What the heck does that mean? So these are insults that don't mean anything. These are words that they're meant to give an impression, an emotional impression in a reader that's not too careful. And then over time, it'll just germinate and they'll have this prejudice from here on in. That's how bad this is. And of course, it plays on American ignorance. It plays on the fact that no one really gets into this stuff with any depth. And it's, the entire thing is one emotional tirade. Now, we used to say that to make fun of people. This is actually an emotional tirade. When you use language like that without evidence, just as kind of a cudgel to beat someone up with, you know that this isn't the mark of a secure, well-informed, regime. These people are scared. This is them essentially screaming, you better listen to us. How come you're not listening to us? And they're digging their own grave here.
Well, they make their readers out to be idiots, I think. They're assuming that their readers are complete idiots to think that they can't see the hypocrisy in this and that it's actually America that is destroying states, Iraq, Libya, Syria. I mean, we seem to have one every couple of years. There's another country that's been destroyed by America. And to make out that sovereignty is a bad thing and that it should be looked down upon because it's now associated with Russia, and that's just unbelievable. I think they vastly underestimate the intelligence of American readers. I don't think Americans will go along with this. I don't think Americans are that stupid.
Well, just as an aside, just let me interrupt you just for a second. Remember, when Putin took office in 2000, the American left and the American establishment were very, very happy because they saw him as a KGB guy who's going to restore the Soviet Union and we're going to have socialism again. That's what they thought. Until he began saying things and doing things slowly but surely that made them uneasy. And of course, yours truly was the very first one to say, wait a minute, he's one of us. And so from thinking this guy was this wonderful, you know, the bearer of Trotsky's crown to the prophet of nationalism and self-determination, I am taking credit for this, but it shows you that this is the enemy. They never talked about the Soviet Union like this, ever. Not at any time did they ever talk about the USSR like this, not the gulags, not anything else. They defended them, they protected them, they traded with them, they gave them money. But the minute they start talking about national sovereignty, all of a sudden now there's sanctions and threats of war and emotional, angry tirades like this, and they're calling it journalism.
Well, this nonsense about not Russia creating failed states. When you think about Syria, I know that David Cameron had a vote about going to bomb Syria, and something like 90% of the public were against it, and 90% of the people voted against it. And I'm sure I remember reading that it was something like 90% of the American public were against getting involved in Syria as well. I mean, at a time as long past when they could get away with this. We remember Libya. We remember what happened there. And just look at the state of the country now. You know, they did Iraq, and you could say, well, that was a mistake. But then Libya as well, that can't just be seen as a mistake. And then Syria after that, they just cannot fool the public any longer. And articles like this are just going to be laughed at, I think. I mean, the next one as well that we've got here, I mean, they're making allegations that Russia is controlling a German MP. And of course, the German MP has to be a part of the Alternative for Deutschland because that ties in with the smear campaigns against the civic nationalists in Germany. Again, this report comes from RT. US Special Counsel Robert Mueller's search for a Russian hand may be fruitlessly over, but the greater hunt for the Kremlin bogeyman is not. Mainstream media are finding new targets, the latest being an opposition MP in Germany. On Friday, the BBC dropped a fresh-ish bombshell. A German politician, it claims, could be absolutely controlled by Russia. Its sources are alleged emails sent between Russian officials provided in 2017 by an anti-Putin tycoon's investigative organization. The MP in question is Markus Frohnmeier from the right-wing opposition AfD party. He is not a surprising target, having spoken up against anti-Russian EU sanctions and taken trips to post-2014 Crimea and eastern Ukraine. Now, the BBC says it has conducted a joint investigation with German and Italian media outlets into the 2017 emails and released a report at a time when the Russian active measures narrative seems to need a boost to keep going after Mueller's fizzle. The aspirant bombshell is hidden at the end of a text document, allegedly mailed by former Russian MP Pyotr Premyak to senior Putin official Sergei Sokolov. There, someone spells out how Frohnmayr's chances of getting into the Bundestag are high, how he needs support for the election campaign, and here it comes, how if he is elected, Russia would have its own absolutely controlled MP in the Bundestag. Frohnmayr himself, when shown the paper, said that it's a fake and he had never seen it before. The Kremlin has made no comment so far. The BBC admits it is unknown if Moscow followed through with its supposed plan to control the MP. So, I mean, this could just be any email that they've got hold of here, I think, Matt. If they haven't got any other evidence to actually back this up, they've just got some email. I mean, this reminds me of fake tweets and fake emails that have recently been thrown at Sargon of Akkad, saying that he was responsible for saying things which it had been shown 4 years ago that he wasn't actually responsible for them. And the press are now trying to say that they've now only now just got hold of them. And this seems to me like it's something like that. Well, what do you know about this one?
Well, how hard is it to do that? You know, if I were to run for office, they could easily forge something saying that, you know, the FSB has been paying my tab, which, by the way, I wish they would. And you know, even if it was later proven a fake, well, so what? It's still in the public mind that that's the case. Not everybody's following it that closely. And so all they have to do is just plant the seed and it becomes a prejudice later on. But look at this right after here. And by an anti-Putin tycoon. Now, that's the American word for oligarch. But they won't use that here because an oligarch is anti-Putin by definition. But these oligarchs have their own journalistic institutions. In other words, they have their own NGOs. They hire their own journalists from, you know, Colombia or whatever it is, and they're under their control. So these are the people now who are giving news to the rest of the planet. And they're taking these guys, obviously not exactly objective sources, or even worthy sources as objective sources of information. It's like when people use the ADL or the SPLC as an objective analysis of who we are, not realizing that, no, they're leftist activist groups. They can't be trusted in that respect. But the worst thing here, what I'm seeing is if there is a shooting war with Russia and they're able to plant enough of these seeds in the public mind that pro-Russia people are somehow controlled by the Kremlin, that would then give governments a perfectly good legal excuse to round us up. And it doesn't matter whether the evidence is good or not, or you could forge these things so easily and you could make them look really good. And then because there's a tie to an enemy organization, you could use all kinds of treason laws and everything else. And the left wing will sound all patriotic, sending us to camp. This is an actually serious non-hypothetical situation. You know, in America, this occurred right after World War II started, where the isolationists on the Great Treason Trial were all rounded up. It didn't work out, but FDR tried to send them all to jail and almost succeeded. We know that Abraham Lincoln did it during the American Civil War. It happens all the time. It happened during World War I, the German-Americans. So this isn't hypothetical. It seems to be, at least at some level, the real plan here.
This reminds me of when we were discussing the oligarch who owns the TV companies last week, the Ukrainian one that's exiled, but that actually owns all the TV companies in Ukraine. You know, he's saying that these oligarchs own these huge media companies and these big charities. I guess they're similar to Hope Not Hate. And it confirms that as well in the final quote that we have here. Incidentally, the papers, which the BBC says it has seen, but never showed anyone other than in translated snippets or stylized graphics in its program Newsnight, comes from the Dossier Center, an outfit of self-exiled Russian tycoon Mikhail Khodorkovsky, a Kremlin critic seen in the West as a victim of political persecution. With all the subjunctives and questionable sources involved, it is too early to say if the alleged papers have any merit. All will prove to be just as fraught as the Steele dossier, one of the shaky pillars on which the Trump-Russia collusion theory was built. And was that Steele dossier? Wasn't that the one that was saying that Donald Trump was a big fan of golden showers and prostitutes when he was in a Moscow hotel?
Yes, right? Yes, the highest levels of journalism, yeah.
Written by some ex-MI5 guy, I think, who admitted it was all made up, and that was basically what it was based on. That whole Mueller report was based on a bit of fake news.
And it's easy to do. I mean, Mikhail Khodorkovsky, no one's going to really remember him. He was, of course, a Jewish oligarch in Russia who never paid taxes. At the time, only in his 20s, was a multi-billionaire and was going to sell major Siberian oil fields to ExxonMobil. In other words, Russia's sovereignty, at least in that respect, was going to be sent over to the U.S. And Putin had him arrested on his way to sign the documents in his limousine. And the U.S. went crazy. Now, that's who Khodorkovsky is. Now, of course, the man paid about 25 cents in taxes his whole life. It's really easy to get him. But the West went absolutely crazy. And this essentially was the big, ExxonMobil and BP getting very upset. We missed out on billions of dollars. So now we're going to use this guy and his organizations to attack Putin. That arrest of Khodorkovsky was one of the main catalysts that created this vicious anti-Russian ideology in the American elite.
You know, it's a huge story here, isn't it? It goes right back to the fall of the USSR and these oligarchs buying everything up and then Putin getting in there and getting rid of them. And people that aren't that didn't actually live through that, there's very little that actually talks about that. And they make these guys out to be heroes. You know, like they say here that he's an anti-Putin critic. He supports the West. I mean, he's basically an oligarch. I mean, he ripped the country off. They all ripped the country off. And Putin did what nobody expected him to do. And he locked these guys up. And a lot of them are still living in exile in Israel. But it's a fantastic story anyway. And I'm glad we've got you here to report on it all and what's going on in Russia. Matt, thank you very much for coming on today. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Grandpa Lampshade. God bless and hail victory.
Radio Aryan. At RadioAryan.com.